Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Look, you have to make sure you're protected. You have to have a great insurance agent that understands your needs, understands your budget, and is your partner when there's a problem. And is also a partner to make sure that you are updated on your insurance so that you don't have a problem. That's Purdy Insurance. Customer friendly, because the customer means everything. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's been a while since we've heard the great Dave Michigan with a call.
Jonathan Drouin gets it center point to Jake Dodgen. Back for Drouin, right point. Nearly fumbled it. Keeps it moving, though. Drouin is stripped. Gets it back. Dances in front. Score!
What a goal by Jonathan Drouin! The Lightning win it! 3-2! What a play! What a play! What a play! Drouin magic!
The former voice of the Hershey Bears, Dave Michigan, with the call on the play-by-play call of the day. You may be asking, what did that do for the playoff chances of the Tampa Bay Lightning? To hear such excitement. To their credit, Tampa Bay now has 60 points. They have the second worst record in the Atlantic Division. They have the third worst record in the Eastern Conference. Thus, the feeling of Armageddon. Now, they're actually only 8 points out of a second place, to their credit, but you get that one again? You got to play that one again.
Sure.
I mean, first of all, like, the blood pressure is pretty good here until the end.
Jonathan Drouin gets it center point to Jake Dodgen. Back for Drouin, right point. Nearly fumbled it. Keeps it moving, though. Drouin is stripped. Gets it back. Dances in front. Score!
What a goal by Jonathan Drouin! The Lightning win it! 3-2! What a play! What a play! What a play! Drouin magic!
Our play-by-play call of the day. All right. Nathan Beard joins us now from the Lafayette Courier-Journal. Nathan, Caleb Swanigan has remade himself. And in the process, he has been able to take his game to another level. You watch it every day. What level is that now?
The thing that really jumps out at you is just the kind of the physical changes that he's made just in the past year. I mean, he was a guy, and his story's, you know, well known, a kid that was up well north of 300 pounds at one point in his life as a younger man, you know, eighth grade, and then has come all the way back, you know, so he's lost 100 pounds. And this was still, as of last year, kind of growing into that body and still transforming himself athletically. So one thing is just his physique and the way he plays now, kind of with this relentless motor. I mean, it's because he's in such great shape. He can go, you know, the 30, 32, 34 minutes he plays, he seems to be going at just kind of a nonstop energy level. So that's really, when it comes to rebounding, that's really what it is. It's the reason he's been able to get, you know, 13 rebounds a game is that he just works so much harder than everybody else out there and never really lets up. And it makes him tough to guard offensively too, both in the post and then a guy that still has the energy to drift out and hit three-pointers when they need him to. He's a really versatile offensive player. But the thing that really stands out to me, though, is just that it's and I noticed this early this season. I remember being in Cancun when Purdue was playing down there, and he had, you know, you're now you're 5-6 games into the year, and he's starting to kind of just every game. It became more like, you know, if you get 15 points and 10 rebounds, that was kind of an off game for him. You started to kind of maybe not take for granted a little bit this high baseline of production he was settling into, and that's been maybe the most surprising thing is that he's averaging 19 and 13, right. But it's just how consistently he's able to put up these, you know, 25 point, 16 rebound kind of games.
When I look at him, I think he's an NBA 4. And the reason I look at him as an NBA 4 is because of what you just talked about, that he can face up and take a jumper, which the NBA guys love, but he's also a willing passer. I feel like his passing is an underrated part of his game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and Purdue, I will give them credit for this. I think it was something that Matt Painter and his coaching staff saw early on when they were recruiting him. And then they recruited him for a long time. And being an in-state guy, they got to see him a lot. But it was something they recognized really early on. And you're not wrong about him being an NBA 4. In fact, that's why he's at Purdue, or one of the reasons he's at Purdue, because he knew, and his father, Roosevelt Barnes, knew that by him coming here, Purdue already had, at the time, 2 7-foot centers.
That's right.
Even when A.J. Hammonds left, they knew there'd be another 7-foot center here in Isaac Haas. So now, even though Swanigan technically starts at the 5, Haas comes in usually at the first, at the under 16 break, and then those guys play together a lot of times too. It just so happens that because Purdue really likes having Vince Edwards at the 4, that dynamic means that Swanigan has to play more 5. But they knew coming here that it would give him the opportunity to kind of develop, especially from a defensive standpoint, to playing the 4 at the next level. That was kind of the goal all along. I think he still has some strides to make there defensively, but he's definitely gotten better in the past year, and his game is just more efficient than it was the last year. You'll still see some spikes in the turnovers, but he also, I mean, in the past week he played 70 minutes or so and only had 2 turnovers. And I thought that was a big boost for him too.
Yeah, he's around, what, I think 90 turnovers for the year, which is actually a pretty high number, but you're right, lately
right.
It is not. What, and a team that, in my opinion, still has a point guard issue, what has Dakota Mathias meant as a distributor?
Yeah, he doesn't run the point too much for them, but he's a great, you know, second piece to have back there. He's just such
right.
a steady player.
That's why I said he's a distributor.
Right.
He's not the point guard.
Right. He's more of a he's been a bigger defensive asset, really, in a lot of ways, because he's taken over that role that Rafael Davis used to have,
right.
Of being the guy that they put on the other team's top scorer, typically, as long as it's not a true post guy. But no, I mean, he's and that was another guy that early on they saw just kind of the court vision that he had. He did run some point when he was coming out of Elida High School in Ohio, so he had some experience at that position, but they always knew that he would be something that Purdue, I think, really covets, which is a shooter, but somebody who also has those point guard skills that they can fall back on. I would dispute a little bit that the point guard's been a big issue for Purdue. P.J. Thompson is not necessarily the flashiest player out there, but when you start looking at things like his assist-to-turnover ratio, the fact that he can hit three-pointers, and they've actually encouraged him to be even more aggressive than he already is at hitting threes. He's a guy, he's only going to average about, you know, what he does, 7 points
right.
a game. But he's another guy that, kind of like Mathias, is a pretty steady player back there. And then Spike Albrecht, who they expected him to play maybe a bigger role when he came in as a grad transfer, and he's had some injuries and some other things that had held him back at some point of the season. But we're starting to see him get a little bit more comfortable offensively, and that's a good guy to have as your second piece, a guy with that kind of proven ability, even if he isn't necessarily the player he once was. There's a savvy there, and there's just sort of a veteran a presence that he can bring to the floor.
Yeah, I'm looking big picture, though. I'm looking mm-hmm. at the NCAA tournament. And when you start stacking up, you know, they're going to be, I think there might be a few matchups along the way where there are going to be some people saying, gee, I wish we had their point guard. That's
right.
just me. That's just me looking
yeah.
at the big picture of it. It's not putting down PG.
And
go ahead.
Right. And I'm sorry. And supporting your point, there are going to be times, too, this year where you're going to play a team that has multiple really strong guards. You're going to put so maybe, you know, Amelo Trimble or someone like that, a really good lead guard. I mean, he had a pretty good game against Purdue at College Park, especially as far as getting to the foul line.
Right.
So when Mathias has to take someone else away, do Purdue's point guards step up and handle that lead guard? I think that is actually an issue that they have to address going forward.
Right. Isaac Haas has put together a couple of really solid games back-to-back. I think he's only missed four or five shots total in the past week. What are you seeing in his development?
He was another one. You know, early this season, he was playing incredibly efficiently. I mean, go back and look at the first four or five games this year, they may not have been a more efficient offensive player in the country, period. I mean, he wasn't missing any shots. He wasn't missing free throws. And he had started to cut down on the turnovers. And then he admits that he got, I think, a little bit complacent with that. And then he had a back injury. He went down hard in the Purdue's last loss, which is at Nebraska about 3 weeks ago. And it took him a few games to come back from that. And I think it was really affecting him offensively. But he's such a, I mean, you can't replicate him. There's no team out there that could put, there's no way to just turn one of your guys into 7 feet to 290 pounds and do that in practice. Like, there's no real way to account for that.
He's a two-legged building.
Yeah. And he is skilled on top of that. But the problem is, I think sometimes when he tries to do too much, when he keeps it simple, there's not a lot that people can do. When he tries to do too much with the dribble or doesn't get deep enough position on his post-ups, that's when he sometimes has trouble with efficiency. But when he gets a deep position and they get the ball inside to him, and when he's smart enough to pass it out of the double teams, which he's gotten better at, and so is Swanigan this year, then those guys are really hard to stop. I mean, you know, Tom Izzo the other night said, those two guys on the court, sometimes you just pray, because you have to just hope that they miss a shot, because there's not a lot you can do defensively other than foul them, which is what Michigan State tried to do, and then had two of their best forwards fouled out by the end of the game the other night. And both those guys shoot really strong from the free throw line. You know, Haas and Swanigan both up over 70%.
Right.
And that makes it really tough to defend them, because a lot of times that used to be what you could do to teams is, you know, the big guy doesn't hit his free throws, you know, hack a shack kind of situation. So we'll foul him. You know, we'll use three, four guys to just foul him over the course of a game. Well, when they're hitting three throws like that, that takes that option away. It makes him, it adds just another dimension to what's already a pretty strong offense.
I think, yeah, and here's where I think this is a really strong offense. Any team that has Haas and Swanigan and only gets 46% of their production from two, because they get 34-35% from three. Nathan, what are you seeing in floor balance and their ability to really stretch the floor out that then frees up everything?
Yeah, and they've had some really crazy nights as far as hitting threes, well up over 50%, close to 60%. I remember a game against Auburn down in Cancun. But they also had one where they shot about, I think, 58% at Nebraska in that game that they lost.
Right.
So it taught them a couple of important lessons about, A, you know, making sure that they keep that balance, and B, just that they needed to defend better, and they've done that since then. But that is, I mean, every coach that comes in, I can't tell you how many times this year we've had an opposing coach come into the postgame press conference and say something about, well, you got to pick your poison against these guys. I mean, it's a cliche, and it's become even more of one this year, but it's true, because whenever you double those guys, it's leaving someone wide open, and that's why probably the most important offensive development this year for Purdue maybe has been the fact that Swanigan and Haas have become so much better at recognizing those and passing out of them. Last year, Swanigan and especially, but also Haas, would sometimes get themselves in trouble by trying to do too much through the double team. And this year they've gotten a lot better at just turning, and someone has to be wide open at that point, you know, getting it out to, and it usually any of those four guys can shoot threes. Besides those two centers, you know, when Swanigan's in the game, all five of those guys can shoot threes. He's been up around 50% this year. It really is a really tough defensive matchup. And when Purdue doesn't commit turnovers, which has been kind of an Achilles heel a couple times this year, it's really tough to keep them below, you know, 70, 75, 80 points, even on a really good defensive night, because they just have so many options every time down the floor.
One final question, Nathan, I'll let you go. Thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. And that deals with Penn State. This is the second time you'll see them in person. What do you see in Penn State? Because obviously when they played out of Purdue, that day they played young, very young.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's going to happen. When you have a team this young and you're going on the road, you know, Mackey Arena is a tough place to play. I mean, you've been there. It's loud. It can be really intimidating when it's full. I don't think maybe personnel-wise it was the best matchup for them. We'll see how they react to it the second time because, when you look at the numbers and you watch Penn State, they've done some good things at times defensively this year, and they've got the kind of offensive balance that you think will help them. I know the first time around they just didn't shoot the ball well inside the arc. I mean, Purdue had a really strong defensive game, I thought, that night. It was kind of one of the first games we saw them sort of coming around defensively in a more consistent way. They actually shot pretty well from three that night, so we'll see if that's something they can replicate. They shot better from three than they usually do, so maybe they can, if they can replicate that at home and then find a way to get some interior scoring going. But this is actually a team that I like what they're doing here. You can see that I mean, the young talent across the board here.
Right.
You think that the arrow is pointing up for Penn State. It's just going to be a matter of probably having some patience. This year there's some growing pains, but if they can extend their season a little bit in the Big Ten tournament and just get some of those extra practices, extra experience, I think that could pay off next year.
Nathan, absolute pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Nathan Beard from the Lafayette Journal-Courier. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. All right. Let's get everybody up to date on what's going on. I think the trade of Boogie Cousins from Sacramento to New Orleans helps Tim Frazier. Tim's been averaging about 25 minutes a game. He's been averaging about 15 minutes a game his last 10. But this trade included Buddy Hield going to Sacramento. Between Tim Frazier and Drew Holiday, that kind of opens the door. Just thought, I think it helps Tim. Number one, it solidifies, I think, his spot on the roster the rest of the year. Let's start with that. That's good. I mean, I looked at that trade. The first thing I thought was, this doesn't hurt Tim Frazier at all. Not bad. Because Cousins isn't coming in to do anything except play forward. They gave up a couple of guards to do this. All right. The NBA All-Star Game was just terrific. Did you watch any of it?
I did not watch a single minute of the game last night, but truth be told, Saturday night...
You and most of America.
Yeah, truth be told, Saturday night, I did watch all of the slam dunk competition. I was very disappointed in that. I was hoping I was tuned in time to catch... I wanted to catch C.J. McCollum in the three-point competition, but I missed that, but I tuned in just in time for the slam dunk, but that was... That's getting to the point where you're lucky to get one good slam dunk competition out of, like, you know what, four or five in a row?
Yeah. I saw none of it, so.
They had one of the players in the slam dunk competition. I think he's barely played. He hasn't even been in the league for, like, 3 weeks or something.
Right.
So you just got to get in. You know, Shaq and Reggie Miller and all them pretty much said at the end of the show, we got to get some, blue bloods. You got to get some household names back in this competition to, so it gets its pop and sizzle back. Whether that would do that, but
I'll be honest with you, it's that stuff, the home run derby, these skills competitions. I don't know. It doesn't really do anything for me. It never really has. I think initially they were fun.
But I did catch a replay of the Kristaps Porzingis in the skills competition. I was impressed with that. just how tall he is, how he's able to get up and down the floor quickly. And
oh, no, he can play.
He sure can.
He can absolutely play.
It's too bad he's stuck in New York with all that going on.
Oh. Incredible. All right, final half hour. Love to hear from you. 1-800-795-9565. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. And Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
6 more weeks of winter? Not here at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see ya in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
The president of Sunbury Motors just signed an executive order proclaiming it's spring selling season. And these deals will more than warm your heart. Sunbury Motors Kia has 80 new Kias to choose from. 2016 Optima starting at $17,999. A 2016 Forte EX for $15,999. And three 2016 Rio EXs, your pick for $14,999. There's also financing as low as 0% for up to 60 months. And of course, Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Our president has spoken. Spring has sprung at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com. Warranty is unlimited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. You know me, I like the best of anything. And you know, that's why it's great to be affiliated with Sunbury Motors and Brewers Outlet and Purdy Insurance. You have to have a great relationship with your insurance agent. I mean, trust is so important. You want to be able to trust. They're going to find you the best insurance that fits you. They want to find you the right price. And if something happens, you want them to jump in as if it happened to them. That's Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports bozo of the day, then we'll take the call here. There are so many ways to go. Do we go with Kyrie Irving saying the earth is flat? Do we go with the reporters that made a big deal out of nothing? That the earth is flat. Or do we go with Oklahoma State Wrestling, which thinks that it's really cool to stream things in 2017? I vote Oklahoma State. Who's in charge of that clown show? All right, let's get to, is this Baird?
You are correct, sir.
Hi, Baird, how are you today? It's great to have you with us.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call, guys. My questions, I have two of them, if you don't mind, and they're both related to Penn State Wrestling. And no, I did not stream it yesterday, but yes, I did listen to Jeff Beyer do his radio commentary, because that's the best way to go anyway.
Uh-huh.
So here's my first question. So during the match, I think it was Jimmy Gulliban was wrestling, and although he lost a really tight match, 3-2, it sounded like, at least by Jeff's observation, that twice he appeared to pin the guy during the match. And I thought that maybe Kale and the coaches would request an inquiry. It didn't happen. But later on, then there was a second match. Not sure who, maybe Jason Knowles, and he had a flurry of activity right at the end of one of the periods where he took the guy down. He had him on his back for a couple of near-fall points. And then all of a sudden you heard them saying that they were going to be reviewing that. So my question is, and I enjoy wrestling. I follow it. I admit I'm not, I'm still somewhat of a novice at it, but how do you have a limited number of opportunities where you can question situations? Are there things in which the refs say that's not something we can review? Much like they do in football, some things are reviewable, some things aren't. I'm not sure. Ultimately, in the end, of course, Penn State came back, roared back, and convincingly won the match. But yeah. It bothered me that not once but twice, at least by Jeff's unbiased observation, he pinned the guy twice, and they didn't even review it or even take the opportunity to review it. So maybe they never actually asked. I'm not sure.
Yeah, two really good questions. This way I understand it. When the referee thinks that there is a near fall, they can then look at the review to see how many points can be rewarded on it. And they felt with Nolf there was a near fall, so they wanted to see if there would be any points attached to it. That was the referee's call.
Okay.
On Gulabon, I, you know, everybody that's seen it, now you saw it, Sean. And you said it looked like he pinned him.
Yeah, Mitch Rupert, the wrestling writer from the Williamsport Sun-Gazette, he posted on his Twitter yesterday about the very last 15 seconds of Gulabon's bout, and he looked completely decked to me. I mean, how you can't call that a pin is beyond me. And I'll be honest with you, Steve and Baird. Baird, you were listening to the radio broadcast like I was with Jeff. I was surprised. I thought Jeff would be a little more animated. Usually, you know, Jeff will, you know, call it like he sees it, and I give Jeff a lot of credit to keep the energy in. But I was really surprised I didn't expect him to completely tee off on the referee. But maybe it was just more of an astonishment feeling that Jeff was going through as he was making the call as to why there wasn't even any near fall points too.
I mean that's the thing right there. The official didn't even look to see if it was a near fall. Right. Baird, I'd have to see it to know what the answer is to that, and I did not see it. I've heard about it, but I did not see it.
Right, and I apologize, I talked over you for a moment, but he didn't even get the pin. Excuse me, not only did he not get the pin, he didn't even get the takedown. The takedown alone would have been enough to have him win the match 4-3 instead of losing it 3-2. But it ultimately didn't matter, but it had potential to matter. Now, true to Jeff's credit, he gave a shout out to the ref and said, "This is, you know, this guy has a story history, is a great ref by experience." So that being said, and again, I don't know. I'm not sure if the coaches are allowed to even ask for a review, or that's strictly at the decision of the referee. Hard to say. So anyway,
that's a good question. I'm not quite sure about that. I don't know if they're allowed to challenge or anything like that. Somebody else may have a better answer than me. But hitting it, I mean, the area it hurts Jimmy Gulabon is this: it goes in the books as a loss.
Right.
A pin could have helped his national seeding.
It clearly could have. So, you know, the best he can do now is go out and just have a tremendous Big Ten tournament in a couple of weeks. And the bottom line is, regardless of what your seeding is, ultimately you've got to work through them all. And so it matters not whether he's going to be seeded fifth or second. He goes out and he wrestles as he's capable of wrestling. It will be a non-issue if you can see him in the final. So
right. It looks like Baird, like he's wrestling better now than he has in a year.
Oh, absolutely, unquestionably. Last year he was really labile, very up, very down. This year started off with a loss or so, but in the past 3 or 4 weeks, he's just been wrestling just out of his mind and on. So I'm sure no one was more disappointed in that he didn't get the win than he was yesterday. But I know he will use that as emphasis for going out and proving that he's the wrestler that we all know he could be. So
right.
One more really quick question. We all know that obviously football makes the most money of any major sport in recent Division I at NCAA. So, and obviously the best of the programs commensurately pay their coaching staff accordingly. How does it work whenever you get to some of the other programs? And I'll use as an example Gail Sanderson, who is, you know, unquestionably the best coach in college wrestling now and maybe ever, with five championships in the last 6 years, and certainly a strong likelihood that they can repeat again. And I see that he makes a fraction compared to what a football coach does. And I'm not saying that football coaches aren't deserving of their salary. Clearly they are, at least in my opinion. But it's not half. It's not a quarter. It's a very small percentage. What determines is it based on what everybody else is making throughout the country? How do they determine what they are going to pay a Kale Sanderson or a Russ Rhodes, who have these incredibly very successful programs? Because clearly they bump to make $4.5 million or so, but they're making significantly less than that.
Excellent question. Let's take this in a couple parts. Number one, the marketplace determines what a coach gets paid in a sport. And the pay scale in football and in men's basketball is completely different than it is in women's volleyball and in wrestling. The pay scale is just different. Now, why is the pay scale in the market different? The football program here makes in the neighborhood of between $25 million and $35 million a year in profit,
right,
depending.
Right.
The men's basketball.
Does the salaries of the coaching staff come out of that?
Yes, there's a base salary, but there's more to it than that, Baird. There's a base salary. Then there is Nike money, which is evenly distributed, I think, among the coaches. I don't know, football may get more, men's basketball may get more. And then remember, too, what they also have in football, men's basketball, are the coaches' shows. And they get paid from Learfield as well. So that gets, that's not Penn State money. That's from Learfield.
Okay.
So that makes up the difference that you're talking about. There also is, while there is pressure on every coach, no question, there is pressure on every coach to be successful, win academically, so forth. There is far more financial pressure on the football and men's basketball coach to win than anywhere else. You can plug in whomever you wish to be the coach of other programs. And Kale Sanderson's had a great, great run, as you point out. But they still lose between $250,000 and $500,000 a year as a program.
Right.
Okay? Now, men's basketball, not as successful. But between the TV contract, the radio contract, and of course whatever attendance they get, they end up making between $5 and $7 million a year. So they support themselves, the wrestling program, the women's volleyball program, the women's basketball program. Football can support everything else. So there's a lot of financial pressure on those coaches, but also because of the television contracts, where every game is televised in football and men's basketball. And the radio contract, which is not insignificant for football and men's basketball, that's a big financial difference maker. And then the marketplace shapes all of it. What are the other 65 Power 5 coaches making? What are the other 65 football coaches in Power 5 making? Okay, Kale is the best of the best in a program, where, in a sport where nobody makes any money.
Right.
So, he compared himself against the gentleman, Mr. Smith, who I believe was the coach out of Oklahoma State, obviously highly successful. They're probably making comparable salaries, I would assume.
I would guess. I would hope Cale's the highest-paid wrestling coach in the country should be. I'd hope that Russ Rose is the highest-paid women's volleyball coach in the country because I think they've earned it.
Right.
But the marketplace for those sports are exponentially different than football and men's basketball. The marketplaces are just completely different. So, on the base of which sport's successful, you can't take that and use that in a salary realm because when others support the other, the marketplace becomes different.
Right. It all makes sense. So what we need to do is continue to support our team, continue to push, and hopefully back the Big Ten and supporting programs like wrestling.
Absolutely.
And women's volleyball that don't necessarily get national attention regularly. You're not going to see them on ESPN except maybe during the championship weekend.
That's right.
And put pressure on programs like Oklahoma State to not sell out to Flow Wrestling.
That to me is one of the more absurd things I've seen. Show of hands, who would like to set wrestling back? Thank you, Oklahoma State. Okay, in the back? Okay, you go ahead, you can do it. Brilliant job.
And although the statistic or the data probably isn't out there that for public consumption, I would guess that a significant majority of the people who did subscribe yesterday were living in Pennsylvania and not in Oklahoma.
You got that right. I agree with that.
All right, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Great call, Baird.
Thanks.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
A lot.
Hey, Dick in Milton's waiting. Hi, Dick. How are you? Thanks for your patience.
I also listened to Jeff Byers yesterday, and that's one reason I called, because of Flow Wrestling. First of all, without any control awarded on a takedown in the goal line match, there could be no back points, so obviously
right.
That was never a count. And I saw a Facebook pitch, and he's as flat as you could. He's as flat as my desk right here, literally. And why he wasn't called, I guess that's like getting homered in basketball. Guy's
right.
Number one in the country, defending national champ. I guess they gave him a pass, I'll just put it to you that way. And I don't like to see it. That's what happened.
Right.
Because you can pin yourself, and that's what happened. Anyhow, you know, I think I mentioned this to you before. I used to subscribe to Intermat, the paid side, but everything switched over to Flow Wrestling, and you literally have to pay to get any videos, which I think is absurd, because to me, you would think that the NCAA and wrestling would promote their sport and not where everybody had to pay to watch it, I guess is my point.
You are absolutely right, Dick. There are certain sports where you just want to get the word out and promote the sport. Do not sit there and take pennies on the dollar for something silly. Just give it away because you could make up for it in football and men's basketball. Just give it away so that you promote fans of the sport.
I'll tell you how absurd it is. Before, up until last year, you could subscribe to Intermat and get, like, you could follow along. You couldn't watch this stuff, but you could follow the results of the matches as they were taking place.
Right.
Now when you go there, they throw you, if you want to do that, they throw you over to Flow, and you have to jump through hoops. You can do it for free, but sometimes it's not as easy as it used to be, and they want you to pay that $20 a month subscription fee off of PayPal, which I did for a while. And the only problem with that is, in the middle of the summer, I don't want to be spending $20 a month for something I'm not using.
Right.
And you almost have to jump through hoops again to get rid of the thing. So I never resubscribed again. I just did it up until, like, because I go to the tournaments, there's no sense in paying for something you're not going to be watching. To me, and as I say, I think it's kind of absurd that they don't want to promote their sport more than that. But there's one venue that's Flow Wrestling to watch literally everything, and I'll tell you might not even know this. It literally also that's how you follow high school anymore.
Wow.
High school, college. If you wanted to follow the results of the Pennsylvania high school wrestling there, now don't get me wrong. There's some local people that actually stream the stuff on Facebook or on the YouTube or whatever.
Right.
And you can do it that way, but every school's not going to every fan's not going to take the time to do that. But other than that, you go through, and they throw you to high school results. You go right through Flow Wrestling.
It's absurd, because if I were to pull any administrator aside 10 years ago and told them that between Fox, ESPN, Big Ten Network, and CBS, that in 2017 you're going to get between $40 and $50 million a year in TV money, plus you're going to get eight figures in radio money for your football and basketball contracts, that all fall into the floor and said, I can't believe what's happened to us. Well, it has happened. And since it has happened, and this has nothing to do with Penn State, okay? Penn State on GoPSU Sports gives its content away. But this has to do with all the other schools in the country, and has to do with the sports that they're involved in, okay?
Yep.
Outside of football and men's basketball, give away your content. Just promote it.
Well, you would think that's what they would want to do. And the other thing is about, this is a little aside about Oklahoma State. And up until a few years ago, when Nebraska jumped to the Big Ten, literally the Big Eight, whatever that conference was, the Big 12, Big Eight, Big 12, they didn't have enough wrestling schools. They actually didn't have enough schools to qualify for automatic bids into the NCAA for a while. Because they didn't have enough wrestling schools.
None of the Texas schools have
it. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Iowa State, and Missouri. That's it. I think that's the four. There's another one now. I think somebody got in so they could qualify.
Well, Missouri's now, of course, Missouri's wrestling out of the Mid-American Conference, I think.
I don't know that they have wrestling, do they?
Missouri has wrestling.
No, the Mid-American Conference. I thought Missouri stayed in the big, I think they stayed in that conference for wrestling.
They might have, because the SEC doesn't have it. See, the SEC doesn't have any wrestling at all.
Right. There's a bunch of conference.
Missouri was stuck between a rock and a hard place, and none of the Texas schools have wrestling.
But I still thought that they stayed, because that conference now has automatic bids, I think. I'm almost positive. And you have to have X amount of schools, or you don't get them. Five, I think it is. I think that's the magic number for some reason.
You have to have some sort of tournament to do it.
And they didn't have enough schools. They all thought they were Notre Dame football teams, I guess. I don't know.
No, the problem is there are only 75 wrestling schools.
Right, I understand that. Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem that they have. Go ahead.
You know the IWAs, which are at Bucknell at Lewisburg the same week, there are 16 schools in that conference now.
Yeah.
Which is the biggest. That's the most schools. That's more than the Big Ten has. And they're not Big Ten schools in a sense. They have good teams with Cornell and Lehigh, and some of the schools that are there are good kids, but they're not Penn State and Michigan State, or Michigan and Iowa and Minnesota. You know, that's a different level by and large for the most part.
Right.
But anyhow, and then you got the Oklahoma States, and Iowa State's not very good this year. They're not very good at all anymore, and Oklahoma's so-so. So basically, other than Oklahoma State and Missouri, if they're still in that, that's it down there.
Missouri is in the Mid-American Conference.
They are in wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah, they jumped over there, so they were the power school.
And I had that right, and I knew that. I knew I was 98% sure when I said it, because they've wrestled Ohio University, Kent State, Buffalo, Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan, Northern Illinois, Northern Iowa, SIU Edwardsville's in with them, and then they have the MAC championships coming up in Cedar Falls.
Well, I'll tell you what, here's an idea for a show after PIAAs. Have some coaches on and ask why there's, and ask them if they have any opinions on to why there's such a dwindling number of wrestlers taking part in high school wrestling in Pennsylvania.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I thought the numbers. Well, I would have assumed. I would have assumed, and it's only an assumption on my part. My assumption would have been that there were more. I didn't realize it was less.
I tell you what happened in District 4. This district here is one of the strongest double-A districts in maybe in the whole state, easily. And you can't go to a match, a high school match with 14 weight classes. Sometimes there's as many as 5 or 6 or 7 forfeits in a 14 match bout anymore.
Wow.
And I'll give you an example. I think Bloomsburg High School was down to like 6 kids. There's teams that don't. 14 weight classes only have 15 kids out anymore. And I've talked to some coaches about it. And one of the problems is I think there's too many weight classes, 14. And a lot of coaches think that, but the problem is District 11, which is the big power high school conference in the whole state, which is the Eastons and the Bethlehems and that whole area, they never have any problem getting kids out because the schools are so big, so they don't want to drop. They don't want anything changed. Maybe even the WPIL out in western part of the state. But I'm telling you what, the District 4, double A especially, and even I think District 3 maybe is having some issues with it too. It's not just District 4. The smaller districts with the smaller schools, they're having issues getting kids to wrestle.
Wow.
They might be having trouble getting kids to do anything. I'll tell you what, if you...
Football numbers are down, I know that.
It's overall. But you might have some coaches on to discuss it sometime, because it's going to be an issue down the road. You might end up having teams almost have to combine to keep the wrestling programs going. I hope I'm not exaggerating, but...
Wow. Huh. That would make a very interesting show. Appreciate the idea.
I mean, I don't know about District 6, which is your area up through there. I don't want to tell you. I just know District 4 is experiencing it.
I'd have to ask around here. I don't know. All I do know is that James Franklin and the gang showed up in singlets today for their staff meeting.
I saw that one. I saw two things. I saw that, and I saw Gulliban pin that kid.
Me too, online.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dick. Joe Lenardi on the show tomorrow. Joey Brackets breaks it down for us. Where is everybody? Does Sean have a shot at winning the pool this year?
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.